Good morning. I wanted to dedicate this morning's learning as a refuah shleima for Bela Liba Bas Rivka. I want to look at the Haftorah of Parshas Kisisa, the back of the article Chumashim, page 1160. The Haftorah of Kisisa is not frequently read. It's a very well-known story, but usually Parashas Kisisa coincides with Parashas Para, one of the four parashios, and therefore it gets a special Haftorah, and we don't often get to read this. The Haftorah speaks about the famous story of Eliyahu Bahara Carmel, on Eliyahu HaNavi, and how he was trying to convince the Jews to come back to serve Hashem. I think the gist of the story we're all familiar with, but I want to maybe we'll just learn through the story and point out different interesting things along the way and just try and appreciate the story the way the Navi teaches us the story. So, and hopefully at the end we'll try and figure out again, besides the most obvious connections, what the connection is between the Haftorah and the Parsha. The most obvious, obviously, being that Bnei Yisrael were worshipping Avodah Zarah and now needed to be brought back in our Parsha by Moshe and in the Haftorah by Eliyahu. But as we'll see, perhaps there are other connections that can be made between the Haftorah and the Parsha. So one interesting note is that as we had this a few weeks ago when we were looking at the Haftorah as well, there's a major difference between where the Sfaradim begin the Haftorah and where the Ashkenazim begin the Haftorah. The Sfaradim begin the Haftorah on page 1161, in the same Perek, in Perek Yiches, in Pasuk Chaf, which is the latter half of the story, which is the crux of the story. But the Ashkenazim add on about 19 other sukkim and begin from the beginning of Perek Yiches. So it's interesting to try, and maybe we'll try and understand a little bit why that difference exists. So just to bring us up to speed with where we are in this story, because the story only begins in Perek Yiches, in Perek Yud Zayin, suddenly this new person, Eliyahu, appears. The king in Bnei Yisrael at the time was Achav. Achav was married to Izebel, and they were both actively working on trying to get Bnei Yisrael to worship Avodah Zarah. The main Avodah Zarah was what was called Baal, and they also, Izebel was very involved with Asherah, which is Avodah Zarah involving trees. And what happened is the way this isn't brought down in the Pesukim, it's not clear from the Pesukim themselves how this story began, but Rashi explains based on Chazal that there was a close friend of Achav who was named Chiel. And Chiel decided to rebuild Yericho. He didn't like the fact that there was this empty city that was sitting there in ruins, so he decided to rebuild Yericho. Notwithstanding the fact that Yehoshua had put a curse on anybody that would rebuild Yericho. And the curse was that as you start building it, as you lay down the foundation, one of your children will die, and the last child will die when you put up the final door on the city of Yericho. And Chiel didn't care very much for what Yehoshua had to say, and decided to go ahead with building it. And as Yehoshua had said would happen, so happened to Chiel. As he began building it, his child died, and his final child died as he laid as he attached the final door to the city of Yericho. So Rashi tells us that he was saying Shiva for his children, and both Achav the king and Eliyahu Anavi came to pay a Shiva call and came to visit. And Eliyahu, as part of his Shiva call, was giving a little bit of rebuke to Chiel and saying he brought this upon himself. Yehoshua said this was going to happen, and you didn't listen to what Yehoshua said. To which Achav basically responded, well, why should we think who was greater, Moshe or Yehoshua? Who is the greater Navi? So obviously Moshe is the greatest Navi we have. They said, well, if what Moshe says doesn't come true, then why should we think that what Yehoshua says is going to come true? Obviously it had nothing to do with Yehoshua. What did Moshe say that wouldn't come true? Achav said that Moshe said, it says in the Torah, that if Bnei Yisrael will worship Avodah Zarah and they'll leave from Hashem, there won't be any rain in Eretz Yisrael. And here I have all of Bnei Yisrael worshipping Avodah Zarah, and the rain is coming. So Eliyahu said, okay, you're right. From now on, it's not going to rain in Eretz Yisrael until I say so. And that's exactly what happened. Eliyahu basically had to go when he was sent by Hashem into hiding. There are different aspects of the story. For a while, he was living in a cave, drinking from Nachal Kris. It started to dry up. He went to this woman, this almana, this widow who was taking care of him. And that's when her son died, and he was Mechayim Mason, who brought her son back to life. And that's basically where the story picks up in Perek Yirches. So I think we're just going to go through the story pasuk by pasuk and just try to point out different things along the way. I think it's a fascinating story. So it says, "Vayhi yomim rabim udvar Hashem haya el Eliyahu b'shana shlishis le'mor." Many days had passed. It was in the third year of this famine, and Hashem appeared to Eliyahu and said, "Leich he ra'ei alacha v'etna matar al pnei adama." It's time that you should appear before Achav, and rain should come down onto the ground. Why now? Why suddenly does Hashem decide that it's time to rain again? It's not going to start raining till Eliyahu says that it's going to start raining. But why now did Hashem tell Eliyahu, get moving, go to Achav and tell him that it's going to rain? So the Radak says that many people have started doing tshuva because of the strength of this famine. There was nothing to eat, there was nothing to drink, and because of the difficulty, some people, or a significant number of people, actually began to do tshuva. Alternatively, he says that as rampant as Baal was, there were enough people, he suggests about 7,000, that had withheld from worshipping Avodah Zarah, withheld from worshipping Baal. And in the chus of those people, he said, it is the time. And the Malvim seems to say that Hashem just decided it was time to try and inspire the people to do tshuva. He couldn't go on with the current situation. Even if it wasn't working and they hadn't done tshuva yet, we needed to change, to try something new in order to get Bnei Yisrael to do tshuva. So he has to appear before Achav. And Eliyahu goes to appear before Achav, and the famine was very strong in Shomron. Vayikra Achav, now going to Achav's side of the story. Achav called El Ovadyahu Asher al Habayis to Ovadyahu, who was in charge of his household. The Ovadyahu haya yoreas Hashem od. Ovadyahu was a person who feared God. The Navi now will tell us what exemplified the fact that he feared God. It's interesting that Achav would have such a person who was God fearing in his home, but maybe we'll understand that a little bit soon also. When Izebel was trying to destroy all the true prophets of Hashem, Ovadyahu took 100 prophets, he hid 50 in 2 different caves. The Gemara said that he learned this from Yaakov, the same way Yaakov split his camp so that if part should be cut, the rest will remain. Here also, we knew Izebel was seeking out all the Nevi'im of Hashem, trying to destroy them. This way, if she found one cave, it would still be the other cave of 50 Nevi'im. And he made sure that they had food and water. And on the surface, that doesn't sound like something so amazing. But if you think about it, this is in the middle of the famine. Nobody else is really having food. The fact that Ovadyahu somehow was going and trying to get enough food for everybody, for all these Nevi'im, was not an easy task. And that was the way he did. V'chilkam lachem v'mayim. V'yomar Achav el Ovadyahu. And so Achav says to Ovadyahu, again, who's in charge of his house. Again, it could be that the fact that his Yirah Shemayim is also seen by the fact that he was able to do all this while he was in Achav's house. Meaning Achav is this Rasha. He, for whatever reason, was put in. Achav, as we'll see, maybe trusted him more than other people. That's why Achav kept him around. And that's why that also indicates the tremendous Yirah Shemayim that he had. So Achav now says to Ovadyahu, go throughout the land to all the springs of water, to all the streams, maybe we'll find something, some sort of grass, to help the animals be able to eat. And the animals should not lose out. So why did Achav specifically ask Ovadyahu to go on this mission? And why was he so interested in saving the animals instead of saving the people? There's a famine throughout the land. Why is he so concerned that we should find some food so that no animals should die? He should be concerned that no people should die. So the Mefarshim should point out that the reason that he asked Ovadyahu was because he realized that Ovadyahu had Yirah Shemayim. And he was the only one that he could trust that if he found food, would bring the food back as per his instructions, instead of just eating whatever it is or taking it for himself. You know, any other servant that he had, when he sees that this famine is taking place, is going to take it for himself. And that's further indicated by the fact that he says, as we'll see in a second, that they were going to split it up. Achav was going to go one way, and Ovadiah was going to go the other way. Meaning the king himself, Achav, was the only other person that was going to go on this mission to try and find something and something to eat. So that's the significant role that Ovadiah played. Why the animals? So the Mefarshim explain that Achav, and this we'll see this maybe a little bit also, a little bit later on, is that Achav understood, or seems to have understood, that this really did come from Hashem. Meaning, as much as he believed in Baal, it's not clear if he was what we call a real Maimon or not. Did he really believe in Baal 100% or not? Or did he realize that the fact that there hasn't been any rain is because Eliyahu said God isn't going to bring any rain until I say so, which would be until the time that they do tshuva and they come back to Hashem. So what Achav knew was that people have bechira, people have free will, animals do not. So maybe, even if God wouldn't be giving any water or food that the people would be able to have, but maybe the punishment wouldn't be as strong for the animals, and maybe we can, if we're searching for the animals, maybe we can at least find something for the animals, and still Hashem would still provide some water or food for them. So they're going on this mission. They split the land to search it out. Achav halach b'derech echad v'ado, and Achav travels himself, again, which is very strange for the king, he travels himself in one direction. V'ovadyahu halach b'derech echad v'ado, and Ovadyahu went in the other path by himself. V'ayhi Ovadyahu b'derech, and Ovadyahu was on the path, v'inei Eliyahu likraso, and he sees Eliyahu is coming towards him. V'ayakireyu, and he recognizes him, v'ayipol alpanov, and he falls on his face. V'ayomer, v'atazeh adun Eliyahu, is that you, Eliyahu? Vayomer lo ani, yes, it's me, lech emor ladunecha, hine Eliyahu. Go tell Achav, Eliyahu is here. So Kli Arachar asks a very obvious question. The Pasuk says that he recognized that it was Eliyahu. It says, he saw Eliyahu, he saw Vayakireyu, and he recognized him, and he bows down in front of him, and then he asks, Tazel Adoni Eliyahu, is that you, Eliyahu? Why is he asking, is it you, Eliyahu? He already knows that it's Eliyahu. So what the Kli Yachar says is that he was giving Eliyahu Musar, and he was saying, he's saying, I recognize that it's you, Eliyahu, but is it really possible that it's the same Eliyahu that should have Rachamim? Again, Eliyahu is the one who, quote unquote, is in control if it's going to rain or not. Eliyahu told Achav, until I say it's going to rain, it's not going to rain. So he's holding the key to whether it should rain or not. So Vayyahu says, the Jews are sitting here, they're starving, they have nothing to eat. What happened to your Rachmanus? Have some pity on the Jewish people. Is this the same Eliyahu that we knew of before? The famous Navi? Show some mercy to Klal Yisrael. And that's Eliyahu's response, says the Kli Yachar. Vayomer lo ani. No, it's still me, it's the same person. Because you didn't realize, and there's no way that you could have understood, that the alternative to Klal Yisrael suffering would have been Klal Yisrael being wiped out, and would have been something more severe. So what I did in intervening at this point, and to make sure that this famine came, and that would be their punishment, and that would be the way that we would try and inspire them and to come back to Hashem, is better than the alternative of having some sort of plague that would wipe out so many people. So he says, and he shows that, And he supports the contention that it really is the fact that I'm doing it for the good of the Jews, because now I am coming. I was the one that was coming towards you, and I want you not to go to Achav. I am taking an active role. I didn't forget about the Jewish people, but now it's time for something. Now it's time for something to change. And now Ovadiah has a very interesting response. Again, Eliyahu just told him, tells Ovadiah, go back, find Achav, and tell Achav to come see me. I want to talk to him. Pasuk test, Vayomer Mecha Tasi. Ovadiah says, Eliyahu, what did I do wrong? Ki aton osein es avdechav yad Achav amisein, that you're giving me over to Achav to kill me? What's he talking about? Chai Hashem Elokecha, You have to know that Achav sent to every single country throughout the world to try and find you. He's been looking for you because he knows you're the one that caused this. The Amru Ayin, and every country said, you're not there. The Ishbiyas HaMamlocha V'Sagoyin made them all swear that you're not there. Kiloyim Tzekara, they didn't find you. The Atah, and now Atah Omer, you're saying, Lechem Orla Adonecha, Hinei Eliyahu. Now you want me to go and tell him that I found Eliyahu? V'haya Ani Eleich Meitach, what's going to happen? I'm going to leave you. V'ruach HaShem Yisohach Al Asher Lo Eda, and God's Spirit is going to come and you're going to vanish. And you're going to end up somewhere else. I'm going to go, you're going to be waiting over here. I'm going to go tell Achav, oh, Eliyahu is here, he's waiting if he wants to see you. We're going to come back and you're not going to be there. Ubasi lahagil Achav lo yimtza Achav haragani. And then he's going to come back and he's going to say, you know, what are you, kind of trick are you playing on me? You know how desperately I'm looking for Eliyahu. You tell me that Eliyahu is there and then he's not going to be there anymore and he's going to kill me. V'avdecha, and then me, your servant, Yorei es Hashem minu roi. I've been fearful of God all along. Don't you know? Halahu God Adonai Hashem Rasisi, what I did, Barog Izebel Nevi Hashem, when Izebel was trying to kill the prophets. Vo'achdim Nevi Hashem Meo Ish Chamishim Chamishim Ish from Merov Achalkim Lechem B'Mayim. I saved 100 prophets and I gave them food to eat. Ve'ata, and now Ata Omer Lechem Or Ladonecha Yineil Yova Haragani. And now you're saying that I should go and tell him that Eliyahu is here and he's going to kill me. Vayomer Eliyahu says, Chai Hashem Sivakos Asher Amarti Lefonav Ki Hayom Eiroe Eilav. And he says, I swear basically by God that I will appear before Achav today. It's very, very strange. What was Eliyahu so worried about? Eliyahu Hanavi tells him, go tell Achav that I'm waiting for you. And he thinks Eliyahu is playing a trick on him? Eliyahu Hanavi is going to then disappear. So the first point out, it seems to be that Eliyahu was well known for this disappearing trick. And that he had the ability to disappear and appear elsewhere. Okay, Eliyahu Hanavi, I'm not going to ask questions on him. But what was Eliyahu so concerned about? Eliyahu Hanavi tells him, go tell Achav to come see me. And then he really thinks that Eliyahu is playing a trick on him to try and get him killed? This is very, very strange. What was he so concerned about? So I saw in the Sefer Mishpat Zohar, interesting, he usually quotes Chazals and stuff. I'm not sure if this was where he was quoting from when he suggested this. But he said that he wasn't concerned at all. It wasn't that he was worried that Eliyahu was going to disappear. And that Eliyahu was trying to play a trick on him. But he had a complaint to Eliyahu. He said, you're sending me to tell Achav to come to you. So what happens if I come to Achav? And I say, Achav, Eliyahu says you should come. I found Eliyahu and he said, come to me. And Achav was going to say, I'm the king. Eliyahu wants to see me. Eliyahu should come to me. I'm not going to lower myself to the point where I'm going to be going to, according to whatever Eliyahu wants, I'm going to go him. And he's going to say to Ovadyahu, you found him, you go and you force him and forcibly bring him back to me. And then I'm going to come to you and you'll still be there. I'm not worried you're not going to be there, but you're not going to let me forcibly bring you back to Achav. It's clear that you want Achav to come to you. And then if you're not going to let me back, and then that's the Ruach Hashem is going to take you somewhere else, you're going to end up somewhere else, and I'm going to come back to Achav and say, I don't have Eliyahu, then Achav's going to kill me. So why don't you, Eliyahu, instead of telling Achav to come to you, why don't you go to Achav? And it could be that already he'll kill me. Even if I just show up and I say that I found Eliyahu, he's going to say, you know I've been searching for him. Why didn't you just kill him? Get rid of him. On the spot. You know how much I've searched. Why didn't you kill him? I don't care if he wants to see me or not. You should have killed him. And those are the two complaints that Ovadyahu had to Eliyahu. And he was saying, and therefore, not that Eliyahu was playing a trick on him, but therefore you should come with me and appear before Achav. And then Eliyahu basically responded to him that no, Hashem said that I should appear before Achav, and part of what Hashem wants is that Achav should lower himself in front of the Navi and should realize that the Navi Hashem, who's representing Hashem, is the one who's in charge, and he has to lower himself to come before me. But at the same time, Pasuk Tesvav maybe is a way of at least alleviating this concern of Ovadyahu. And when he says, Vayomer Eliyo, Chai Hashem Tzvakot, Hashem Arzav, Ki Hayom Eroei Lov, that was a guarantee. Maybe he said it b'nevuah, he knew. He said, don't worry, because I am going to meet with Achav today. So don't be concerned that he's going to kill you. Don't be concerned that he's going to say, I'm not going to come. I know, you know, I guess I'll p'nevuah, I can guarantee you that he's going to come. And that was the back and forth. It had nothing to do with Eliyo playing tricks, and Ovadyahu thinking that he was going to play tricks, but it had to do with this back and forth, whether was it so essential for Achav to come to Eliyo, or could Eliyo come to him? And Eliyo said, no, fundamental to the message is that Achav has to realize that he is subservient to God and to the Navi of Hashem, and therefore he has to lower himself, and even as the king, needs to come and show himself before me, before the Navi. So the Navi continues, Vayelach Ovadyahu likrat Achav vayagidam. And Ovadyahu comes before Achav, and he tells him, Vayelach Achav likrat Eliyahu. And Achav comes. And it's a tremendous bizayo, and it's an embarrassment for the king to do it. Maybe it's a little bit of, it's reminiscent of Paro having to search after Moshe when the king has to lower himself in order to find the person who is representing God. It's a, in a certain sense already, a big victory. It's putting, you know, the king in his place and really making him try and understand what his, where his position is relative to Hashem. So when Achav sees Eliyahu, Vayomer Achav, Elov Achav says to him, Hatozeh Ocher Yisrael, is that you, the one who is destroying Yisrael? Vayomer Lo Acharti Es Yisrael, I didn't destroy them. Ki Matov Beisavicha, it was you, it was your father's house, it was all the kings from your family who have brought all this Avodah Zarah into to the Jewish people. By leaving the mitzvot of Hashem, to go after Baal. And now, Shlach Kivot Elias, Kol Yisrael al Har HaKarmel, bring everybody, all the Jews to Har HaKarmel, Ves Nevi'i HaBaal, and the prophets of the Avodah Zarah Baal, Abar Meos B'Chamishim, 450, Unevi'i HaAsherah Abar Meos, and the 400 prophets of the Asherah, Ochle Shulchan Izevel. Those prophets of the Asherah were the ones that would eat with Izebel, again, because Achav had brought in the Baal, and when he married Izebel, she also introduced the Asherah. So Eliyahu asks for three groups of people to come. He asks for all the Jewish people to come, he asks for all the Nevi'i HaBaal to come, and he asks for all the Nevi'i Asherah that they should come. You see the one more pasuk, Vayishlach Achav b'chol b'nei Yisrael, Vayikbot es ha-Nevi'im el har ha-Karmel. And Achav sends out to all of b'nei Yisrael, and he gathers the Nevi'im, the prophets, to har ha-Karmel. So there are two interesting things that seem to be, one is not 100% clear now. First of all, Achav, it doesn't say that he gathered b'nei Yisrael to come. So the only ones that he gathered were the Nevi'im. And as we'll see in the continuation, that the only Nevi'im that he actually gathered were the Nevi'i HaBaal. He didn't gather the Nevi'i HaSherah, which is why everybody always thinks of the story is it's the Nevi'i HaBaal against Eliyahu, because that's what happened. Only the Nevi'i HaBaal showed up. The Nevi'i HaSherah did not show up. So the Mepharshim are bothered, what happened? Eliyahu was asking for these three groups to come. He was asking for all B'nai Yisrael to come, the Nevi'i HaBaal to come, and the Nevi'i HaSherah to come. And yet the pasuk seems to only tell us that that Achav gathered together the Nevi'i HaBaal. So the Mepharshim explained that the only ones that Achav could force to come were the Nevi'i HaBaal, because they were under his control. He had no way of forcing the Nevi'i HaSherah to come, because who were they? They were the Ochli Shulchan Izebel. They were the ones who his wife, Izebel, was in charge of, and he had no way to force them to come. And on their own, the Nevi'i HaSherah were never going to come, because they knew that there was no way they could beat Eliyahu. They knew that there was nothing to what they were doing. They knew that it was all, you know, some sort of trickery, and they were fooling people. So they were smart enough to realize that there's no way that Eliyahu versus them, that they're going to be able to accomplish anything. So they didn't want to show up. The Nevi'i HaBaal, because they were stuck. They might not have wanted to come either, but they had to come because the king was forcing them to come. Which leads to the question, again, and it would seem to be that Izebel also, because Izebel probably could have forced the Nevi Asherah to come, but she didn't either. It seems to be that she also probably realized the same way the Nevi Asherah realized, that there's no way that they're going to beat Eliyahu HaNavi. So the question is, what about Achav? Why was Achav willing to go ahead with this test, willing to put the Nevi HaBaal up to it? If the Nevi HaSheira didn't want to come because they realized they were fakers, and Izebel didn't force them because she also knew that they weren't going to beat out Eliyahu, so why would Achav go ahead with this? Why would Achav send and force the Nevi HaBaal to come? He didn't, right, I don't think he knew yet exactly what he was going in for, but he knew something was going on. The fact that Eliyahu wants to gather all the Jewish people, something was going to happen. The details, I don't think he knew, but I have a feeling that he understood that something was about to happen. The details, I don't think he knew yet. But I think it leads one to wonder that either Achav was really a tremendous Maimin in Avodah Zarah, he really believed in Avodah Zarah 100%, even more than Izebel, even more than the Nevi'im themselves believed in it, and therefore he really thought that they would be able to beat out Eliyahu HaNavi. Or maybe he was really kind of caught in the middle, and he really wasn't sure, and therefore he wanted this test to take place, because he wanted to see even for himself, well, what's going to happen? Will Eliyahu win, or is the Baal going to win? And it could be that was the sentiment in the land at that time, and maybe that's why it doesn't say that he had to force Bnei Yisrael to come either, because the Bnei Yisrael wanted to come, as we'll see from the continuation. It seems to be that they weren't full of the Avodah Zarah in every sense of the word. They were kind of, as Eliyahu is going to say soon, they were straddling the fence in both directions, and it could be when they saw there was an opportunity, that there would be some clarity. Is there anything to the Avodah Zarah, or is it only Hashem? They wanted to come, so they were running to come, and that's why the only ones that had to be forced were the Nevi HaBaal, because the Nevi HaBaal, maybe like the Nevi HaSheira, knew that there was nothing to it, and they were going to lose, but they were subservient to the king. And the king, maybe like the rest of Klal Yisrael, was kind of in this state of limbo, and wanted to see what was going to happen, what would take place here. And then in Pasuk Chafalaf is, I think, one of the most powerful Pasuk in all of Navi, Vayigash Eliyahu El Kol Ha'am, and Eliyahu comes to all the people, so you see they're all there. Vayomar, and he says to them, Ad Masai Atem Poschim Ashtei Asifim. How long are you going to basically try to stand on both sides of the fence? Im Hashem Ha'alokim L'chulach Rav. If you believe in God and you think that's the way to go, so follow the word of Hashem. And if you really think that the Baal is the way to go, then go after Baal. V'lo anu ha'am oso davar. They didn't know how to answer. They didn't answer him anything. And this seems to be, this was really, and it's, again, it's a very powerful statement. But the rebuke to them was that they were basically straddling both sides of the fence, and they were at the same time worshipping Hashem and also worshipping the Baal. And he said the two things can't work together. You have to decide for yourselves which way you want to go. But there's no way that it makes any sense to have a little bit of both. And the fact that that's really where they were, and they really didn't know what to do, and they were stuck in this awkward situation of being between both, is they didn't know how to answer. They had no answer. Because they were confused. Again, they brought the confusion upon themselves. They should have been clear. They had the Nevi'im. They had the word of Hashem that was being taught to them. But for whatever reason, they were in this state of confusion of trying to be on both sides. So the question is, does this really mean that they weren't only serving Baal along the way? That seems to be what Eliyahu was saying. So the Radak says that originally they were serving Baal. And then, once the rain stopped, when Eliyahu said it wasn't going to stop, it was very hard to deny that God has some sort of power. Because Eliyahu is speaking in the name of Hashem. The second he said that there's not going to be any rain, and it wasn't only rain, he said there wasn't going to be any dew either. There was nothing coming down. And from the time that he said that nothing came down at all, it's very hard to deny the fact that God has some sort of control, and Baal wasn't able to overcome that. So the Radak says that it was after that point that the confusion began to reign, that they had the Baal on the one hand that they had been worshipping, and now they were confused because the Baal doesn't seem to be able to have more power than God in terms of the rain and the famine. So which way do you go? So they were very confused how to proceed. And the Sefer HaKoyman, Rabbi Yosef Elbow, says that Achav, he wasn't a kofar in the sense of denying God. It was that he also worshipped idols. And he saw, okay, Eliyahu controls the rain. And obviously, as we said earlier, it had to be that there was some significance to that, and he realized that there was something to Eliyahu, or he never would have lowered himself to go before Eliyahu, as we saw at the beginning, when Obadiah tells him to go and appear before, tells Achav to go appear before him, to come in front of Eliyahu. He wouldn't have come if he didn't think there was something to it. Seems to me that he thought that you could have these, you know, intermediaries, you know, acting on one's behalf in front of God, and you could have God at the same time, and there was this whole, you know, mishkababble, everything all mixed together. Rav Chaim Brisker is famously quoted as having said that people often deal with contradictions in life and, you know, are having trouble in certain areas, and then they say, okay, well, if I can't do this, then why don't I just dump the whole thing? Like Eliyahu says, Eliyahu makes it sound like it's all or nothing. So if I can't fulfill every mitzvah, so what am I bothering for? So Rav Chaim said that's not true. He said when it comes to mitzvah, so a person obviously tries to improve, tries to do the best he or she can. But if a person realizes there's an area that still needs improvement, that's not a reason to dump everything else. What Eliyahu was saying was that in the realm of emunah, so then you can't have it both ways. In the realm of emunah, you can't have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Within that, again, that small realm, the emunah has to be complete. If the emunah is not complete, then there really is nothing to it. Because all those things together that define our relationship, our basic relationship with Hashem, from which all the mitzvot then stem. So when it comes to the realm of emunah, that's what Eliyahu was talking about. If you're going to be serving God on a basic level, do you believe in God, do you believe in Baal, then you have to decide. It's one or the other. And that's what Eliyahu was saying to them. In terms of mitzvot, it's not like that. And that's why they didn't answer. They were genuinely confused and didn't know what was right. So what happens? Vayomer Eliyahu el ha'am. Eliyahu says to the people, Ani nosarti navi l'Hashem levadi. I'm the only navi for Hashem that's left. There are 450 Nevi'im of the Baal. Again, clearly, they were the only ones that were there, as we mentioned before. It's interesting that he says he's the only Navi of Hashem. What happened to the 100 Nevi'im that Obadiah told us that he hid away in the cave? So, either that other people didn't know about them, so he wasn't going to bring it up at this time, wasn't the right time to talk about it. It's a little bit difficult to say that Eliyahu would be saying this sort of half-truth at this point. Again, obviously, he wouldn't want to reveal that, but he also didn't need to say that. He could have said, you know, I am a Navi of Hashem. He didn't have to say Levadi. But alternatively, he could just be that in terms of the level of Nevuah that he's on and his relationship in terms of taking this public role and trying to bring Klal Yisrael back, he's the only one. He's the only one that's standing up and actively acting as the Navi of Hashem. The Yitznu Lanu Shnayim Parim, give to us two cows, V'yivcharu Lohem HaPara Echad, and they'll choose for themselves whichever one they want, V'yinatchuhu, and they'll cut it up, V'yosim Waho Yitzim, and put it on top of the branches, V'esh Lo Yosimu, and they're not going to put fire, V'ani Yaseh HaPara Echad, and I will take the other one and prepare it, V'nosat Yaho Yitzim, and I'll put it on top of the wood, the Eish Lo'asim, and I won't put fire either. Ukrasem b'shem Eloheichem, and you'll call out in the name of your God, v'ani akrab b'shem Hashem, and I'll call out in the name of Hashem, v'ayo Elokim asher ya'aneh bo'esh, who Elokim, and whichever one answers with fire, that one will be the one that is God. V'ayan kolam v'yomru, toba davar, excellent, let's go ahead with this. So why did he choose this test? Could have chosen any way in which to try and show that Hashem is superior, the only one who's in control, and there's absolutely nothing to the Navi. The snare is with Eish. Right. No, so it could be... Right. So maybe that should have been... So some of the questions say that Baal was that... I have to say, like, I have to rain on this particular spot. You have to get identified before it. I mean, if it rains on this spot only and not... I guess you could have devised some sort of plan. I think they needed to see something that was absolutely indisputable. It starts raining, okay, maybe, the Baal came through in the end. It took Baal was working for 3 years on trying to get to overturn this rain thing, and Baal came through at the last second. I think Eliyahu wanted something that was absolutely indisputable. And this was something that they were willing to go ahead with. So some of the unfortunate point out that Baal, to them, was actually some sort of fire god. So he was saying to them, I'm going to give you something that's within, Baal's realm of what he's in control of, and let's see if within what he's... Okay, so rain, you're right, rain he can't do. So that's why he was stuck on the rain. You have to ask, speak to a different god about getting rain. But in terms of fire, Baal's the one in charge. It's connected to Mars somehow, they say. And so they thought to Mars within the way that they had their Avodah Zarah. Okay, I don't fully understand all the details, but that would work. Alternatively, Abarbanel says that they wanted to go along with this test because they thought that Eliyahu was doing an Isser. They thought Eliyahu was doing something forbidden. The Beis HaMikdash was around. You're not allowed to bring a korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now you're allowed to even shech the korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So Eliyahu was giving them the opportunity that they should think that since he's doing something wrong, and they knew that you're not allowed to bring a korban outside the Beis HaMikdash. So they were confident, okay, maybe we won't get answered, but he's certainly not going to be answered if he's doing an aveira at the same time. So they were willing to go ahead with this plan. So they put it in a context where they would very willingly be able to go ahead. It raises the question, which we'll hopefully deal with shortly, of A, why not do it in the Beis HaMikdash, and B, was Eliyahu instructed to do this or not, or did Eliyahu make up this whole thing? Did God tell Eliyahu, do this? We don't see that anywhere. It wasn't told to us that he did. All right. Well, as far as we know from the Navi, all God said was about the rain, nothing else. Back when he stopped the rain? When he stopped the rain, he stopped it. That was on his own initiation. That seems to have been on his own initiation. But again, it was a response to Achav saying that the Torah was wrong when it said that it was in defense of Hashem. It doesn't say that Hashem told him to stop the rain. Because he was... That was part of, again, obviously the unique relationship that he had, but because he was doing it, l'shem shamayim, he was doing it in terms of defending the honor of Hashem, so he was confident that that would work. Exactly how he... It doesn't seem to be. It could be in this context that one of the Gemaras seems to imply in the way that he addresses Hashem here that he did act incorrectly. But other than that, it doesn't seem like that was a problem. So the Barbanel said that the reason that the Nevi HaBaal were willing to go along with this plan is because they were assuming that everything was going to happen at the same time. It wasn't clear from the way it's set up right now if it would be one after another, or if simultaneously Eliyahu would be davening and they'd be praying. And they figured, okay, if Eliyahu is answered, what are the chances that the fire is going to come down just on his Mizbeah? It'll probably be a little bit wider, and we'll get ours also. In which case, it won't be clear which way it was or not. So they were confident that God would answer Eliyahu, but they were hoping that still wouldn't make it clear that they were wrong, because the fire would probably consume their korban as well. Now, what are the chances that God is going to be...
clear that God is going to answer Eliyahu. Why are they still trying to prove Baal right?
Because Achav... it seems to me the alternative was probably to be killed by Achav for everything that they've done. Again, the Mepharshim point out that's why the Nevi Asherah didn't show up. They realized that there was not much to what they were doing. So I don't know. The question is, was the Nevi HaBaal, how could they have really thought? I mean, there's a limit. They certainly knew that they weren't going to be able to bring down a fire.
Now, how could they maybe just think that once God wins this contest, that everyone will believe in God and everyone will be happy? I
So why don't they want that to happen?
Yeah.
So again, either they...
Job?
Maybe. Beyond that, it could be that, again, they believed in the Baal in a, again, in a more... in a limited sense, meaning in terms of having some sort of intermediary, and they've just kind of taken it to an extreme. It could be they really were such big mamim. I mean, you don't need to come up with these answers, but I think these mefarshim are trying to straddle both sides of the fence. They're trying to figure out, were they really so confident? And if they weren't, then why would they go ahead with this? Why would they go ahead with this test? I think the Kliyakar says that Eliyahu gave him this test because he realized that this would be an easy one that they would assume they could fake, which is what Chazal tells us they did, that they put somebody inside the Mizbeach who was supposed to light the fire so that the fire would come onto the Mizbeach. So he gave them that opportunity that they would want to go along with it because they would figure, we can get away with this, we can definitely have that fire. And Eliyahu was confident that it wouldn't become a problem. So the Navi continues, so they called out all day, and then nothing was happening. It's interesting that it says that Eliyahu gave them the par. Earlier it said that they were going to be able to choose. So why was Eliyahu giving it to him? So Rashi quotes from a Medrash from Chazal that the par refused to go. Didn't want to be part of this. Didn't want to be brought for the purpose of Avodah Zarah. And until Eliyahu went and actually moved the par and told the par that this is part of being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, even though you're being on the Baal side, that's all, the only time the par was willing to go. The Radak rejects it. He says that it's a little bit far to assume that's the pshat, but most of the Mefarshim seem to try and defend Chazal. And it got later in the afternoon. Eliyahu basically starts ridiculing them, making fun of them. Look, maybe he's sleeping, maybe he's resting, maybe he's involved in a meeting. You know, keep calling out, maybe he'll answer. So it seems to be a little bit strange. What's Eliyahu making fun of? So the Kliyakar, who said earlier that Eliyahu realized that they were going to put somebody inside, Eliyahu was making fun. And he was saying, I know you have somebody inside, maybe he's busy. And, you know, it's really a person who you're trying to get the fire from. Maybe he's sleeping, so you should wake him up. Alternatively, the Gemara tells us that all Leitzanus is generally forbidden. The only Leitzanus that's permitted is Leitzanus of Avodah Zarah. There's a special idea that when it comes to the Avodah Zarah, which is supposed to be, directed towards God, making fun of Avodah Zarah, is a positive. So in fact, he was trying to, maybe he was really trying to mock them. By Krubikol Gadol, they call out in these loud voices, by Skodaduk Mishpatam, and they cut themselves, as was their custom, by Charvos Varmachim, with knives and spears, Achvoch Damalayim, till they're covered in blood, by Hikavar Tzorayim, and it's getting to the afternoon's passing, by Isnabu, Ala Lot HaMincha, and they prophesied, I guess, again, whatever, that refers to whatever they normally did to convince people they were prophesying. And some vain call, vain on air, vain kasha, nothing's doing. So Vayomer Eliyahu l'chol ha'am, Eliyahu says, so people, Yeshu Eli, come to me. Vayeshu kol ha'am, Eliyahu v'yirapeh es mizbeach Hashem ha'arus, and he repaired the disassembled mizbeach of Hashem. And it's very unclear what mizbeach is he talking about. So Rashi said that it's referring to the concept of the Mizbeach, that Bnei Yisrael had forgotten about bringing Korbanos to Hashem, and he was restoring the concept of the Mizbeach. It doesn't fit so well into the simple pshat in the Psukim. But the Medrash says that Shaul apparently had built a Mizbeach on Har HaKarmel, and it was that very same Mizbeach that he wanted to use for this purpose to try and show the continuum of the Jewish people. Vayikach Eliyahu shtei mesrei avonim, and he took 12 stones, k'mispar shiftei bnei Yaakov, probably invoking the Shvatim, asher hayod var Hashem elav lemor Yisrael yashmecha. So it was the same Yaakov who was called for bnei Yisrael. Vayivnes avanim mizbeach v'shem Hashem, and he built a mizbeach. Vayas to alok v'sosayim zera, and he built a trench or a moat around the mizbeach. So Vilma Mizbeach, Ram Mizbeach, Vayarochet Ha'itzim, and he prepared the wood, Vayinatach Zapar, and he cut up the par, Vayosem Ha'itzim, and he put on the itzim, on top of the wood. Vayomer, and then he told the people, Milu Arba'a Kadimayim, fill up four buckets of water, Vayitzku Al Ha'olav Al Ha'itzim, and pour it on top of the wood and the korban. Vayomer Shnu, Vayishnu, and they said, do it again, and they did it again. Vayomer Shaleshu, Vayishaleshu, and they did it a third time. What? Where did they get water from? I don't know. Good questions. Vayachlu ha-mayim saviv la-mizbeach, and the water was so much that it surrounded the entire mizbeach, v'gamas ha-tahala me-le-mayim, and it even filled up the trench around it. Vayihi ba'alos ha-mincha, and when mincha came, vayigash el-yo ha-navi vayomar, Hashem elokei Abraham Yitzchak Yisrael, hayom yivodah ki ator elokim Yisrael v'ani avdecha, you will now show that you are the God and I am your servant. U'bidvarcha atis yis kol advarim ha-ila, and it was with your words that I did all of this. And then he says, Anini Hashem Anini, answer me, V'yedu ha-mazek y'ato Hashem ha-lokim, v'ato ha-tibosa s'libam ha-choranis. And that you were the one who turned their heart back. So these are both very important psukim. So in Pasuk Lamevav, the end of that Pasuk, V'dvarcha asisi eskol advarim ha-eila, and it was with your word that I did all this, sounds like Eliyahu is saying that he had been commanded to do everything that he did until now. At the end, Eliyahu is saying that even though it wasn't written in the text earlier, now Eliyahu is revealing to us that in fact it was said by God. But in truth, it's a machlokas in the Mefarshim. Rashi says yes, simple pshat of psukim, it was given by Hashem. The Rambam seems to say the same thing, but Tosfos and the Radak both question whether in fact this is the case. And rather, what's it referring to when it says that I acted in the way you should? That the Torah allows that a Navi, for a one-time purpose, if necessary, can sort of suspend the normal halachos, and this would have allowed him to bring a korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash, which would have been forbidden. And that's what he meant, that I acted according to your word. But in fact, the basic construct of this challenge came specifically from Eliyahu himself. And then the next pasuk, "Va'atasi bosos libam achoronis," that you turned their hearts away, sounds like he's blaming Hashem for the whole thing. And the Gemara seems to say that he spoke inappropriately when he said these words. Others explain it differently, that either it refers to the fact that Hashem created evil in the world, in terms of giving them bechira, so it's not just saying that's the way you created man, and this is what happened. Not in terms of blaming him, but just explaining that's what happened here. Rashi wants to say in a positive sense that you're the one who's bringing their hearts back. You're the one who can through this inspire them to return to you. Meaning Achav turned their hearts the other way, and you're going to bring them back. Achloranis away, meaning they're pointed away from Hashem. You'll bring them back to Hashem. And the Radak explains, based on the Rambam, who says when it comes to Paro, that sometimes a person can sin so much that he actually loses his Bechira and can't come back. So he's telling Hashem that you shouldn't abandon them, you should allow them to have the Bechira to come back to you. And the fire comes down and swallows up the everything that's avanim, as afar, even the stones and the dirt, as amayim and the water, asher batalol lichecha, it was all swallowed up. Vayar kolam vayplu apayim vayimru Hashem hu alokim, Hashem hu alokim, and there's this tremendous kiddush Hashem, everybody realizing that Hashem is in charge. Just one or two final points. So why was this on Har HaKarmel? So I saw in one of the Sfarim, I don't remember where it was right now, that it said that Har HaKarmel is actually being paid back for what happened at Matan Torah. Usually when we have that whole story about the mountains fighting over who should get the Torah, we look at Har HaKarmel and Har Tavor in a negative light, that they were showing off the midos that they had in Har HaKarmel when they were, Bali Gaiva, and Har Sinai was the one where it should be. But apparently that was true. But on the other hand, the fact that they yearned to have the Torah given on them was still a positive, and Hashem remembered that. And it was specifically in this context where it was Eliyahu had to stand up and act in a way that would be seen as gaiva in a certain sense. He was acting in a very bold way. That it was appropriate to give Har HaKarmel the opportunity to use its gaiva in an appropriate way and to stand up and to show the world that this is what Hashem, this is what Hashem really is. So in terms of midos, that the midos can be used in either direction. So what's the connection to the parasha? So again, on the most basic level, it's the fact that Bnei Yisrael seem to worship the Avodah Zarah, the Chet HaEgel, and Baal, and Moshe and Elio tried to bring them back. That's certainly the case. But what's interesting is that the Sephardim, again, as we had this a few weeks ago, the Sephardim seem to have gotten it right, if that's true. You could have started from Pasuk Chaf, and you have the crux of the story in terms of the Kiddush Hashem on Har HaKarmel. Why do we add the 19 Sukkim that proceed? It gives you some background to the story. It doesn't give you everything. If you wanted the entire background, you should have put on Perek Yizayin also. And it's a very long Torah as it is, so it probably would have been long enough. So what connection is there? So I don't have necessarily a great answer, but what I was thinking was that perhaps there's a connection on the level of, again, what was the focus of the first half was that Eliyahu needed to show Achav the perspective that one needs to have towards the Navi of Hashem, and to realize that he has to be subservient to Eliyahu, and there's a lot of a back and forth with just Hashem telling him appear before, make sure Achav and you meet. And then him working out with Ovadia that he's going to come, that Achav is going to come specifically to Eliyahu, Ovadia trying to convince him that that shouldn't be the case, and Achav ending up in the end coming, and him rebuking, and it ends with, right before we get to the Har HaKarmel, he ends with him rebuking Achav and saying, don't blame me, don't blame the Navi, this was your fault, you're the one who brought the Avodah Zarah into Klal Yisrael. And perhaps, in a different way, that reflects the Bnei Yisrael were also lacking the perspective that one is supposed to have towards the Navi of Hashem. They had it in the opposite direction, which is what's interesting. I mean, Achav had it to the point where he didn't find himself subservient at all to the Navi of Hashem. While Bnei Yisrael, what was the cause of the Chet HaEgel? That they were losing Moshe, that they were too attached to the Navi. They said that without Moshe Rabbeinu, we have no way of relating to Hashem. And that was also a mistake. That the approach that one has to have to the Navi of Hashem is that middle road. And that's the bridge between the Haftorah. The Haftorah deals with Achav, who didn't understand at all, and didn't appreciate the fact that you have to relate to the Navi of Hashem as the messenger of Hashem, and he deserves to be respected because of that, and the king should go before him. But it can't be to the extreme of Klal Yisrael. The Bnei Yisrael thought that the only way to relate to Hashem was through Moshe. And when Moshe disappears, they have no way anymore of relating to Hashem, and it ends up with an Egel HaZahav. That's also incorrect. Maybe the first half of the Haftorah deals a little bit with the root of the Chet HaEgel, and there's a reminder of how we're supposed to relate to the Navi of Hashem.